Today's year is 1545. It was in this year that the development of modern medical science began. No exaggeration, 1545 was the first year. However, this story unfolded over 10 years, so we'll start in 1536 to understand how four frostbitten noses that no one wanted to cut off helped medicine take its first step away from the scriptures of antiquity. My name is Ed Kenelosh. Hello. So we start in 1536. The Ottomans exempt French merchants from the Ottoman law. Buenos Aires is founded in Argentina. Incan emperor escapes from the imprisonment and begins his revolt against Spanish conquistadors led by Hernando Pizarro. King Henry VIII of England suffers a leg injury during a jousting tournament in Greenwich. In the same year, he dissolves the monasteries. Anne Boleyn is beheaded, and Jane Seymour becomes Henry's wife. The heirs of two great thrones die, sending history down a path no one expected. King Henry VIII's only son, an illegitimate son, also Henry, dies suddenly of a pulmonary disease in the midst of legislative proceedings in Parliament that would ultimately allow him to become king. Francis III, Dauphin of France, dies of a cold after playing tennis. His Italian secretary, under torture, confesses to poisoning Francis. It's time of Michelangelo, John Calvin, Martin Luther, François Rabelais, Nicolaus Copernicus and Paracelsus. Next year, the first potato will arrive in Europe and the first horse races will take place in England. Several years remained before the founding of the Jesuit order and the production of the first globe. Ivan the Terrible is already 6 years old, Elizabeth I turned 3 years old, and it was in this year that she was declared illegitimate, excluding her from the line of succession to the throne. William Shakespeare will be born in 28 years. About 85 years ago, Gutenberg printed his first book, and now, in any major city of Europe, it would be difficult to surprise an educated person with a printed book. And still, medical science is reduced to the writings of ancient authors. There are slight deviations here and there, some original thoughts, some doubts and some questions, but it is still the teaching of the ancient Greeks and Romans. And it was in that year of 1536 that at the Paris hospital named Godshelter, Hôtel Dieu in French, four patients had frostbitten noses. The hospital is very old, founded 900 years before the described events, back in 651. Can you believe this? 651! By the way, this hospital functions to this day and therefore is one of the oldest in the world. The treatment of frostbite was simple. The frostbite was cut off, that is, these four frostbitten noses had to be amputated. Of course, doctors didn't do this. For this, there were barber surgeons, or even better, apprentices of barber surgeons. Their service was quite cheap. At the time in the hospital, most of the young people who called themselves apprentices of barber surgeons were not true apprentices of any particular barber. They helped barbers from time to time, so in a sense, they were indeed apprentices, but apprentices for one time. They practically lived in hospital and were constantly, endlessly looking for anyone who would hire them to do the bloodletting, change of bandage on the wound, apply the leeches, or do something equally simple. The thing is that the four patients with frostbitten noses could not afford even a small fee that those one-time apprentices demanded. Yet, one resident of the hospital volunteered to perform the operation for free. At that time, he was 26 years old. That is, by the standards of that time, he could no longer be considered a youth. By that age, any man was expected to achieve at least something in his life, to become someone and not remain a penniless hospital resident. The times were not for the people from nowhere. People who did not have somebody noble, powerful, and wealthy behind them. Preferably their own family, but at least a patron. He had neither. He was from a small provincial village, from a poor family. His father could be a barber in the daytime and a cabinet maker at night. But to make things even worse, that young man didn't know the professional language of that time, Latin. No knowledge, no Latin, no Greek. And accordingly, no ability to read real medical books. Only one or two existing French language adaptations, greatly simplified versions for apprentice barbers. With all these disadvantages, he tried to study here and there, mostly from his brother, also barber, and finally spent 3 years as a volunteer resident at Hôtel Dieu. By the time of which we are speaking, he was already eligible to take the barber examination, but he didn't have the money to pay for it. For the exam, he needed 72 and a half French sols or sous. You could buy 220 liters of wheat or pay for food for 5 months, so for him it was a fantastic, unrealistic amount. One way or another, he cut off those 4 frostbitten noses, and he did it with his usual high quality of work. Some say that two patients survived, but in fact any number greater than 0 would be a great success, given the level of medicine of that time. In any case, the hospital doctors were able to attest to the high quality of his work when someone, most likely his brother, recommended him to René Baron Mangin and Combourg, Lord of Beaupron. Baron was just appointed 3rd in command in the French army in the war against Holy Roman Empire. The French intended to capture the Italian city of Turin, which belonged to the Empire. With all his shortcomings, the guy needed recommendations even to simply follow the army without a formal position or salary. Thus ended the year 1536 for Ambroise Paré. Well, in English there are numerous ways to say his name. Ambroise Paré, Ambroise Paré, Ambroise Paré, Ambroise Paré, Ambroise Paré. But let's pronounce his name Ambroise Paré for now. For your own research, you can use the spelling AmbroisePare P-A-R-E with acute accent, Ambroise Paré. In this war, Ambroise Paré will be paid by the peace for each operation in which he assists. However, 3 years later, just 3 years later, Ambroise Paré will return to Paris as the most known surgeon of the Italian campaign. In his first war, and there will be many more, Ambroise Paré had many adventures, invented many medical instruments, and created many new surgical techniques. But the revolution we are talking about was not about specific tools or methods. After all, even before him, doctors made medical inventions, right? We are talking about something else. Ambroise Paré put forward 3 interrelated new ideas that finally set medical science in motion after 1,000 years of failure. These pioneering ideas were: use your experience, learn through comparison, and share your experience with others. Are you impressed? Now, really, are you impressed? Use your experience, learn through comparison, and share your experience with others. However, at this time, it was a revelation. It was from this impulse that modern medical science was born. The main factor that helped Ambroise Paré was the appearance of manual firearms. When it was only about cannonballs, stone or cast iron, the wounds of the surviving warriors were not much different from the wounds in ancient times. Crushing and disintegration after being hit by catapult balls. The invention of bullets changed the situation. In 1364, hand bombards with stone bullets were developed. These bullets could not penetrate armor and therefore remained rare. In 1425, about 100 years before Ambroise Paré, metal, cast iron bullets appeared on the battlefield. They penetrated armor just like arrows from a longbow, but caused much more serious wounds. By the time Ambroise Paré decided to follow the army, these metal bullets had spread, the number of gunshot wounds had increased incredibly, and these wounds had become a serious combat problem. A gunshot wound only outwardly resembles a stab wound. First, there are always foreign objects deep in the wound. The bullet itself, pieces of clothing and armor, scraps of skin, etc. This prevents healing, prevents tissues from regaining their integrity. And all these foreign objects are, of course, a source of infection. They bring dirt from the outside environment. Second, the bullet does not just punch a hole in the body. The tremendous force of the impact burns the tissue around the channels that it makes. Moreover, it crushes tissues further around the burn zone. Therefore, the hole in the body is only the tip of the iceberg, the list of the problems. There is an unprecedentedly large volume of dead tissue around the wound channel. In addition, the wound tunnel itself is long and reaches organs that are not often reached by stab wounds. If that's not enough, this tunnel is also usually curved due to the imperfect shape of the bullet, and thus pus and blood are trapped inside. People of that time could not explain the severity of bullet wounds and believed that it was caused by the toxicity of gunpowder. Gunpowder was considered poison. medicine was faced with a problem that couldn't be ignored but didn't exist in ancient times. The authors of ancient Greece and Rome couldn't even imagine bullet wounds. Now doctors had to independently find a solution, invent a method of treatment. In a way, the doctors followed common sense. They tried to divide the problem into its component parts, preferably those parts that were described by ancient authors. And it seemed that the doctors succeeded in this. They divided the problem of the bullet wound into separate problems of the hole, bleeding and poisoning. Each had a solution proposed in the writings of the ancients. How to treat the hole? The ancients say that it is necessary to protect the wound from further damage. To do this, you need to wash the wound and apply a bandage. Because the dressing absorbs exudate from the wound, the dressing needs to be regularly changed. So far so good, right? How to stop bleeding? If it is small, use a bandage. In other cases, you need to cauterize the wound by inserting a cloth soaked in boiling oil. Can you believe this? In boiling oil into the wound. This was called sealing the wound. How to deal with gunpowder poisoning? Also use, you wouldn't believe it, boiling oil. It neutralizes gunpowder. So, what did Ambroise Paré come up with? The first idea, use your experience. In his very first big battle, Ambroise Paré saw soldiers with fresh gunshot wounds for the first time. He knew what books recommended to do, but boiling oil? Therefore, he turned to experienced surgeons, and they confirmed, yes, cauterization with boiling oil is what needs to be done. Paré began using the oil, but there were too many wounded, and it soon ran out. The choice was either to leave the wounds as is, or still try to help. The obvious symptom was pain, so Paré mixed the emollient ointment based on egg yolks and applied it to wounds. No doubt something like this had happened many times before. Is it really so strange in a combat situation when supplies run out? How many soldiers in 100 years of using firearms in Europe were left without boiling oil in their wounds? And how many of these soldiers were receiving alternative medications? The difference was about what happened next. It seems that it was only that night that the surgeon was ready to study the results of his actions. That night Ambroise Paré couldn't sleep. He feared that soldiers without boiling oil would die from gunpowder poison in their wounds. He ran to them very early in the morning, and it turned out that those soldiers had no or little pain, and their wounds had no inflammation or swelling. They rested very well that night. How would any reasonable barber apprentice feel? He violated the procedure, but it didn't have any bad consequences. Lucky. Now he could pretend that nothing happened and move on with his life, right? And what did Ambroise Paré do? He decided to compare. He knew how the soldiers who had no oil felt. What about those who were treated strictly by the book? It turned out that those soldiers had a fever, severe pain and swelling at the edges of the wound. They didn't sleep all night. So what now? You are an apprentice barber without an official position or salary. This is your very first battle. How far will you go in such situation? Paré decided to avoid using boiling oil now on. A small side note, what about bleeding? By not using boiling oil, Paré avoided further tissue damage. And since gunpowder is not actually poisonous, there was no risk. For bleeding, Ambroise Paré, without knowing it, reinvented a method already known to ancient doctors but forgotten in later times, ligation of blood vessels directly in the wound. You simply find a vessel in the wound from which blood is pouring and tighten this vessel with a loop of thread. This invention should not be overestimated though, because sterilization of ligation threads would not be invented until 5 centuries later, but it was certainly a step forward. Now we are moving to the second idea, learn through comparison. Even in the case of boiling oil, Paré made a comparison. It wasn't intentional, it just happened that way. However, from his point of view, this was the only correct way of learning. An Italian peasant woman advised Ambroise Paré to use a local folk remedy for burns, a poultice made from onion juice. Barber surgeons, brought up on Latin books, wouldn't even listen, let alone be willing to try. We are talking about something used by dirty, uneducated beggars from stinking huts, right? Paré tried the poultice, but he tried it in a way that was completely unusual for the world around him. What he did was more like the trials of later times. Ambroise Paré applied the poultice to half the burn and did not apply anything to the other side of the burned face, and he discovered that the poultice was really effective. In his usual manner, Paré didn't keep the new formula only for himself, but gave the formula to the nurses of Hotel Dieu as soon as he returned to Paris. The third idea: share your experience with others. In that world, new medical information was not disseminated in any way, at all. Medical books were greatly influenced by the sincere belief that everything that can be studied and discovered by man has already been studied and discovered in ancient times, and that it's simply impossible to add anything reasonable to it. Don't forget that we are talking about the 16th century. Then, any author suspected of heresy could be executed. Yeah, literally, executed, burnt at the stake. We know the names of 15 people who were burnt during the very years we are talking about. William Tyndale, the translator of the Bible into English. Is it any wonder the doctors were very selective about what to write and publish? Any controversial word could destroy their reputation and authority and possibly endanger their life. Thirdly, when something new appeared, there was simply nowhere to publish it. For example, the recipe for a poultice made from onion juice, discovered by Ambroise Paré. Could it be an interesting publication? Probably. But its description would only take a few lines on a page. There were no scientific journals yet. Publishing this recipe would require writing an entire book, or at least a pamphlet. This means you should have enough material to fill dozens of pages, but you only have a poultice recipe. And last but not least, is that doctors didn't want to publish new things that they came across. As simple as that, they didn't want to. Any doctor made money only when he was hired by a paying patient. If a patient decided to hire another doctor, this particular doctor earns nothing. How to increase your value as a doctor? How to make patients choose you and only you? Probably, you should know and be able to do something that no one else knows and is able to do. Therefore, when the doctor happened to encounter something new and effective, he tried to keep it for himself in strict secret. God knows how many new medications perished along with people who knew them but kept them secret until the last day. A good example might be a recipe of sambal. Ambroise Paré spent a long time ingratiating himself with one of Turin's surgeons and then helped him for free for 2 years only to receive a recipe for a balm for dressing gunshot wounds. Eventually, thanks to gifts and the promise that Paré would go to Paris and not compete with that surgeon in Turin, Paré finally received a prescription. It involved newborn puppies and earthworms cooked with turpentine. Paré tried to use that balm and then had to simply throw it away. In another case, Paré was unable to persuade the doctor to tell him the recipe of a certain medicine because the doctor was sure that Paré would tell everyone and the recipe would not remain a secret. As a result of all these factors, 16th century medical books were either works written in ancient Greece or Rome, or retellings of them. The books, of course, differed in authors' goals, target audience, selection of ancient works cited, authors' emphasis, and so on. Simplified thin pamphlets in the folk language for apprentice barbers and thick volumes in Latin for highly respected professors coexisted simultaneously. However, they were all based on ancient scriptures. One way or another, in 1539, Ambroise Paré returned to Paris a completely different person. He was still technically an apprentice barber, with no formal education and no knowledge of Latin, but his fame was everywhere. Professor Jacques Dubois invited Paré to visit him at his home. Jacques Dubois, or Jacobus Silvius, is best known today as the author of the first French grammar. In those days, he was chiefly regarded as a teacher at the Faculty of Medicine and a doctor at Hotel Dieu. Perhaps it was Silvius who recommended Paré to Baron de Montjean 3 years ago. In our world, such an invitation would not be something special, but then it was almost a challenge to the public. The difference in the formal positions of Paré and Silvius was enormous, so such an invitation was an open endorsement of Paré's achievements. They talked for a long time, time passed quickly, and Silvius invited Paré to stay for dinner. It was there that Silvius suggested Paré write a book. No doubt Paré was eager to share his knowledge with others. No doubt he had enough material for hundreds of pages for a book, or even several books. But he was not a professor, not even a doctor. In fact, he wasn't even a barber surgeon, just an apprentice. And he didn't know Latin. However, in subsequent years, Paré overcame these obstacles. He passed the barber exam, joined the medical fraternity, and even tried to learn Latin. The book was written in French language, from the first to the last word, in French. And what an incredible luck, the book was published! This happened in 1545. Its title was The Method of Curing Wounds Caused by Arquebuses and Firearms. It was nothing like any medical book around. It did not retell ancient works. The author gave away dozens of his personal methods, formulas, and inventions. Each of them came from his own personal experience. All of them were tested and proven effective in real life. Of course, the Paris faculty immediately attacked Ambroise Paré and his book. Surgeons in general were considered inferior to doctors who practiced pure medicine, but this surgeon had no formal training at all. Yes, Paré was criticized and criticized a lot for the fact that he was a nobody, that he did not limit himself to specifically surgical topics, that he tried, as they say, to teach people much more educated than himself, and of course, that he humiliated and insulted medicine by the French language of his book. And at the same time, everyone wanted Paré's book, everyone studied it, everyone followed it. Since Ambroise Paré's book was published in French, and the professional language of that time was Latin, even French doctors sometimes could not understand Paré's writing. The French, of course, understood the text in French on everyday topics, but when it came to medical descriptions and terms, they felt confused. Well, you should understand them. From the very first day of school through all the years of their professional lives, they used Latin when it came to science and medicine. They saw Latin only in books and current hospital notes. They heard Latin only from colleagues. They gathered for hospital talks about the sick and switched to Latin. They organized scientific conference and only Latin was heard there. The French language did not click at all in the brains of French doctors when it came to medicine. Therefore, Ambroise Paré's book was translated into Latin. And it was translated into Latin mainly for them, for the French, and not for the foreign countries. Of course, it was done by someone other than Paré himself, since he didn't know Latin. Regardless of why it was done, the Latin translation made the book understandable outside of France, and it was an immediate success throughout Europe. Paré's works were frequently republished. Folk languages turned out to be attractive even for medical treatises, and several editions appeared in German and Dutch. And among the English translations was that of Thomas Johnson, an English botanist and Royalist Colonel during the English Civil War. The first sprouts of a new modern medical science at that time largely depended on the personality of Ambroise Paré. His numerous further works translated into both Latin and folk languages spread throughout Europe, but after Paré's death, medicine in just a few decades returned to approximately where it was before him, and again limited itself to rewriting the works of ancients. The point is not only that many objective factors hampered the development of medical science, but also in the general mood, in the mentality, imbued with antipathy towards unknowingly unnecessary, as it seemed to many, innovations. The center of these sentiments, paradoxically, turned out to be the College of Saint-Camille and Faculty of Medicine, of which Ambroise Paré was a member. But can artificial barriers really stop a new idea? From the day the first book of Ambroise Paré was published, along with the prevailing ancient medicine, modern medicine somehow imperceptibly began to exist. Medicine based on information that was obtained, tested, and used in real life. This information can be discussed, questioned, and challenged. Alternatives may be suggested. This little thing gradually grew, taking up more and more space in the minds of doctors, until there was nothing left of ancient medicine. That's it for the story about four frostbitten noses and how they paved the way for one book, the very book that somehow managed to give the first impetus that forced medicine to move forward from the dead point, part with the ancients and go its own way. If you would like to know more, I would recommend to read Ambroise Paré's autobiographical essay Journeys in Diverse Places, translated by Stephen Paget. a book Ambroise Paré, Contributor to Modern Surgery by Harvey Sivers, and book Ambroise Paré, Father of Modern Surgery by Edward Mullan. You can find a more detailed list of references along with the text of this story and many other stories in our Facebook page Labora Verum. Labora Verum, one word, Labora Verum. It was Ed Kenelosh, thank you and goodbye.